Blog Talk Radio.
Internet world, welcome to the Crossing Desert, speaking hope and freedom to Iran. I'm your host, Randy Hill Noble. And once again, I want to thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule and joining me for this broadcast. It is Monday morning. I hope everyone had a great weekend. And I was Mr. Mom this past weekend while my wife, Becky, worked at the hospital. I was man in charge of the laundry and grocery shopping. So an interesting and busy yet productive weekend. Well, this is the day before that special day for your wife, your friend, your girlfriend. It is the day before Valentine's Day. So you better do the right thing. Get candy and flowers, all right? Well, I want to talk to you this morning about many, many issues. And the first issue I want to deal with is this anti-Trump movement, which is really all over the world, as we're going to soon learn. Even on Revolution Day in Iran, in Tehran, there was the anti-Trump people stepping on American flags, holding disgruntled posters of Donald Trump. And it seems that the Death to America protests have spread all the way from Berkeley here in California to Tehran. We're going to talk about that. I want you to hear the sound of this horrible movement in Tehran on Revolution Day. Let's listen.
Death to Trump, death to America, these protesters chant at Iran's Revolution Day, hailing the Islamic Revolution of 1979 and unmistakably voicing dismay at the new administration in Washington, especially President Donald Trump.
We are not afraid of any enemies. Trump is a smaller, yes, a smaller one to fight us.
Donald Trump, he's just talking. I think he's just talking and he doesn't have anything to do. And he can't do anything.
What Donald Trump said in the debates, what he says in words, the previous presidents have done in action. So that's why it doesn't make any change to us.
Animosity between Iran and the U.S. has spiked since President Trump took office. The administration hitting Tehran with sanctions after the Iranians tested a medium-range ballistic missile in late January, which the U.S. says breaches a U.N. resolution, a claim Tehran denies. Tensions had eased during the Obama years, but the renewed U.S.-Iranian confrontation enrages many Iranians, leading more people than usual to come to the Revolutionary Day festivities.
Iran's supreme leader has called on people to come out here in force, and that's clearly what they've done, voicing their anger at the United States and especially the new Trump administration.
Iran's president specifically mentioning America's new commander-in-chief in his speech.
And even in the United States, some who are new to the job have obtained the reins of power. All of them must know when it comes to the nation of Iran, they must speak to this great nation with equal respect.
Another issue enraging many Iranians, the administration's travel ban against people from seven Muslim-majority nations, including Iran. Some of those attending the Revolution Day praising Americans protesting the executive order. While many Iranians fear relations between Tehran and Washington could further sour, the country's leadership has made it clear it will not back down in the face of the Trump administration's increased pressure. Fred Plekin, CNN, Tehran.
Well, you heard the Death to America chants. The anti-Trump rally, I guess, is spread from Berkeley to Tehran. Let me point out something to you about the crowd that you're listening to. And I was talking to my good, dear Iranian from Maral about this yesterday. And she verifies everything I know, that many of these protesters, in fact, all of them, are forced to come to this rally by the government. And they do this for a media blitz so that the media has the impression, or we are supposed to have the impression, that all Iranians hate America, which is absolutely false. Many Iranians love this country. Many Iranians have come to this country. The largest population we have of Iranians is in Los Angeles. They love our country. It's these paid protesters that are threatened. If they don't show up, you're going to lose your government benefits. Many of them are forced to come to these rallies. So when you listen to this, the majority of those that are there have been forced to come, excuse me, by the government, and they must do what the government says, as you well know. So I wanted to point that out because there needs to be a context in your city and the media reporting this, that you need to understand that. What I want to do this morning is I want to give us a perspective on what is happening. This furious hatred for Donald Trump, like I said, has spread into the Middle East. And I found what I thought was a very good piece, a very good article on Town Hall. And the name of the article is Death to America Protests Spread from Berkeley to Tehran. And it's columnist Jeff Carey. I think he's Canadian. And this was a piece either picked up at Town Hall or he is part of Town Hall. Really not sure about that. But I want to read his piece to you because I think it has a lot of insight and puts a lot of context on what's going on here. Today, on the 38th anniversary of the 1979 Islamic Revolution, thousands of Iranians demonstrated in Tehran. As usual, the crowd rallied against the great Satan, yelling death to America. They were burning the American flag and effigies of Donald Trump and stomping on the president's picture. Police and military personnel joined the protest this year, which was focused on condemning Donald Trump and his agenda. The intensity of the anti-Americanism was particularly intense since President Trump issued sanctions against the country in response to the intercontinental ballistic missile. The Trump administration declared that the test violated the 2015 nuclear agreement between Iran and six world powers and United Nations Security Council Resolution 2231 that, quote, banned the country from any activity related to ballistic missiles, end quote. In response, the United States officially put Iran on notice. The Iranian regime ignored the president's warning and promptly launched another ballistic missile test. Unfortunately, the anti-Trump rally in Tehran bore some striking similarities with protests that had been organized in America. After the election of Donald Trump on November 8th, liberal organizations have been working nonstop to create unrest. One activist claimed that the goal was to make the country ungovernable. Thus, American flags have been burned, Trump protesters have been attacked, and numerous celebrities, activists, and street thugs have threatened the president. For example, last week in Berkeley, California, demonstrators lit fires, threw firecrackers, broke windows, defaced property, yelled obscenities, and prevented conservative commentator Milo Yiannopoulos from speaking to a Republican group. These activists obviously do not believe in the First Amendment, just like the dictatorship in Iran. In both Berkeley and Tehran, demonstrators are totally uninterested in recognizing opposing views. In Tehran, Iranian protesters waved posters of Donald Trump being punched. Similarly, in Berkeley and other cities, leftist demonstrators have demonized Donald Trump. As the Women's March in Washington, D.C., when Madonna claimed that she had been thinking about blowing up the White House. In Tehran, demonstrators are controlled by radical Islamic clerics who encourage the anti-American protests every year. Iranians do not have the right to oppose these religious leaders, for there is no freedom of speech rights in their country. Based on a recent report by Reporters Without Borders, Iran ranked as the fifth worst country in the world in regards to free speech and freedom of the press. Instead of blaming Donald Trump for all their problems, these protesters should be demonstrating against their own country's tyrannical regime. In the United States, the political left has exploded into violent protests since the election of Donald Trump as president. George Soros, communist groups, and other extremist organizations like Black Lives Matter fund these leftist mobs. The purpose of demonstrators in both Tehran and Berkeley is to bring about the destruction of our nation's constitutional republic. Many of the Soros-backed demonstrators want to overturn this election, impeach Donald Trump, and disregard the vote of the people. These dangerous activities go against the history of our nation. One of the hallmarks has been the peaceful transfer of power from one administration to the next. In this craze, and in this case, crazed demonstrators are not accepting the results, acting in a very counterproductive manner that may have long-range negative implications on our country. In Iran, the mullahs want to spread terrorism and radical Islamic rule. The country is the largest supporter of terrorism in the world. There is irrefutable evidence that the Iranians fund terror groups such as Hamas, Hezbollah, and the Houthis in Yemen. Sadly, the recent nuclear agreement with this country included billions of dollars in payoffs that will be used for more terrorism. In addition, a $1.3 billion ransom also accompanied the Iranian release of American prisoners. In effect, the outlaw regime was rewarded for unlawfully jailing innocent Americans. One common thread in these demonstrations that have been a hatred of President Trump and his policies. After examining the dangerous goals of both groups, it's obvious that the president is on the right path. Great piece from Town Hall, really nailing the issue on the head. In Iran, you better do what the government says. Here in America, you have the freedom to protest. You have the freedom of speech. But what I would call these protesters are domestic terrorists. There's nothing peaceful about them at all. And it's sad to say that they are trying to overturn the results of this election, much like the same terrorists of Iran. And so that's what I have to say that the two groups have in common. I would say this to the Berkeley protesters. You need to pack it up and go to Tehran and see how long you last there protesting against that government. I guarantee you, Berkeley protesters, when you do that, you'll never be heard of ever again, and you'll be in jail or you'll be executed. So thank God for the freedoms in this country. Even for the domestic terrorists, there is freedom. Try that in Iran, Berkeley. You'll never be heard of ever again. And that's my thoughts on this morning. I want to take us right now to an excellent monologue that Sean Hannity delivered just a few days ago on the Ninth Circuit Court decision to stay this immigration ban. And now that it's going to go probably to the Supreme Court and President Trump will have the executive order rewritten for clarification, The issues here are tantamount to our national security being safe. It's obvious to me that the left has no desire to keep this country safe. Liberals don't want our country to be safe. Otherwise, they would not be opposing this ban. But I want you to hear Sean Hannity's perspective on this right now on the Cross of the Desert. Let's listen.
And other travelers from Iraq, Iran, Syria, Sudan, Somalia, Libya, and Yemen are still allowed to enter the United States, blocking President Trump's plan for extreme vetting. Right now, our guard is down, and people are pouring into this country. Now, earlier today, President Trump had this to say about the Ninth Circuit Court's ruling. Take a look.
We are going to keep our country safe. We are going to do whatever is necessary to keep our country safe. We had a decision which we think we'll be very successful with. It shouldn't have taken this much time because safety is a primary reason. One of the reasons I'm standing here today is the security of our country. The voters felt that I would give it the best security. So we'll be doing something very rapidly having to do with additional security for our country. You'll be seeing that sometime next week. In addition, we will continue to go through the court process, and ultimately, I have no doubt that we'll win that particular case.
And earlier today on Air Force One, President Trump said this.
Well, we've all got the unfortunate part is it takes time, statutorily, so it takes a little time. We'll win that battle. But we also have a lot of other options, including just filing a brand new order on Monday. Could very well be. But I like to keep you, I'd like to surprise you. We need speed for reasons of security. So it could very well be that we do that.
Now, President Trump, he gets it. He's making the safety and security of you, the American people, a top priority, and for good reason. Now, we have been warned by top Obama administration intelligence and national security officials that ISIS could infiltrate the refugee population. They've all said it. Watch this.
Would that bring in Syrian refugees pose a greater risk to Americans?
I mean, it's clearly a population of concern.
The concern is in Syria, the lack of our footprint on the ground in Syria, that the databases won't have the information we need. So it's not that we have a lack of process, it's there's a lack of information.
And that obviously raises grave concern as to being able to do proper background checks of the individuals coming into the country.
Yes.
I don't obviously put it past the likes of ISIL to infiltrate operatives among these refugees.
We can only query against that which we have collected. And so if someone has never made a ripple in the pond in Syria in a way that would get their identity or their interests reflected in our database, we can query our database till the cows come home, but there'll be nothing show up because we have no record on that person.
There is some fear that some of these refugees may actually be posing as refugees, but they might actually be Al-Qaeda or ISIS terrorists trying to sneak into Europe or the United States. What do you make of that?
Well, certainly that's a possibility. I mean, you can't dismiss that out of hand.
We should be conscious of the potential that Daesh may attempt to embed agents within that population.
Now, President Trump is listening to the top intelligence and defense officials in this country. And now the president of Syria, he's actually echoing those same concerns. Now, keep in mind, Syria is one of the countries on Trump's travel ban list. And here's what President al-Assad told Yahoo News. Take a look.
Are some of these refugees, in your view, aligned with terrorists?
Oh, definitely.
And, definitely.
Yeah, definitely. You can find it on the net. The same picture that you saw them in some cases, of course, in some instances, those terrorists in Syria holding the machine gun or killing people, they are peaceful refugees in Europe or in the West in general. Yeah, that's true.
That's the Syrian president, essentially a guy who's a dictator, admitting that some refugees are definitely terrorists. Wow. Now, to make things worse, the Washington Times is reporting, quote, 77% of refugees allowed into the U.S. since the travel ban began come from the seven suspect countries. And that's not all. Today, the people in Iran, they were celebrating the 38th anniversary of the 1979 Islamic Revolution by burning American flags and once again chanting death to America. Of course, this is nothing new from Iran, where American flags, Israeli flags, and that type of burning and chanting, well, that's like a favorite national pastime. You may remember when the supreme leader of Iran was caught on tape calling for the death of America. Watch this.
هدفشون این است که مردم ایران رو در مقابل نظام اسلامی قرار بدن. این توجه بفرمایید. البته بله، مرگ بر آمریکا، چون آمریکا اون عامل اصلی این فشار هاست.
Now clearly the people you just witnessed chanting death to America, they don't like you, they don't like us, they don't like our way of life, and they're definitely not in search of the American dream. Now here's the most alarming part of all. The left is in a pre-9/11 mentality. They've forgotten the past, and I fear as a country we may be doomed to repeat this. So to all of you out there applauding this Ninth Circuit decision, listen up. It's time for a very important history lesson. You may remember September 11, 2001, America changed forever after an Al-Qaeda orchestrated terror attack devastated our country and led to the deaths of nearly 3,000 people. And as documented by the 9/11 Commission report, Dr. Condoleezza Rice testified that for years, quote, the terrorists were at war with us, but we were not yet at war with them. Now, that finding is so compelling because in the years leading up to 9/11, it was no secret that Islamic extremists were hell-bent on destroying the United States and killing the American people. In fact, leading up to 9/11, terrorists were responsible for, remember, the bombing of the Khobar Towers, the bombing of the embassies in Tanzania and Kenya, a deadly attack on the USS Cole, and even the first World Trade Center attack. In 1993, we had plenty of warnings. We have a similar buildup now in violence all across the world. Europe has been rocked by terror attack after terror attack, and here at home, Islamic extremists. Remember San Bernardino, the Pulse nightclub in Orlando, Chattanooga, Fort Hood, the Boston Marathon. ISIS has repeatedly declared war on this country, just as Al-Qaeda did prior to 9/11. And right now, those so-called journalists and the alt-left radical mainstream media, they're lying, and they're calling President Trump's temporary travel ban a religious test or a Muslim ban, and they are doing a complete disservice to you, the American people. If we do not take this threat seriously, it's not a matter of if. It is a certainty. It's a matter of when we will be hit again. It's going to happen. So to all of the people conspiring out of political correctness, trying to stop the president's safety measures, I'm warning you, you will be tied to all of this. And yes, I'm talking about Senator Chuck Schumer and his crocodile tears and the hypocrisy he's shown, President Obama, who appeased Iran and couldn't even say the words radical Islam, the liberal and democratic politicians, members of the mainstream media. I've said this many times to all of those out there who are more worried about the slight inconvenience of a few travelers versus the lives of the American people. To you, my message is clear. If another 9/11 style attack is committed here in the United States, blood will be on your hands. Deal with that.
That's Sean Hannity, and it was on Friday night, and I remember getting home from work, and as always, Becky and I sit in front of the TV waiting for this, and I just sat there and I said, I must play that on my radio program. I thought it was the best monologue. It was so well thought out because it's the truth. We are dealing with our country and its safeties. Every person I can think of, including myself, love refugees. I work with Iranian refugees. I write letters for them. I write books about them. And yet, I believe as an American, the safety of our country is absolutely essential. And I know that once this entire situation plays through the vetting and things improve, things will change and refugees will again be allowed to come in. And of course, America is the home of pioneers and refugees. I love them. I work with them. I write for them. And so it is a minor inconvenience for a few months, which will change the security measures of our country forever. And so I applaud what President Trump is doing. He's thinking of America first. Make America great again. Make America safe again. Well, still speaking about Iran, this should not come as a shock to anyone. I came across this article I wanted to read to you. It's very short. It's entitled Decadent Western Culture. Quote, Iran cracks down on Valentine's Day. Well, the Iranian government has reminded people that Valentine's Day is banned because it promotes Western culture and rituals. Officials also told businesses they cannot promote culture through Valentine's Day rituals. The coffee shops received warnings to avoid any gatherings in which boys and girls exchange Valentine's Day gifts. Iran first cracked down on Valentine's Day back in 2009 after the Green Revolution protested Mohammad Ahmadinejad's second term. The government banned symbols of hearts, half hearts, red roses, and any activities promoting Valentine's Day. Now, the Wall Street Journal says the Iranian state has pronounced against unauthorized mingling of sexes, rap music, rock music, Western music, women playing in bands, too bright nail polish, laughter in hospital corridors, ancient Persian rites of spring celebration, Nowruz, and even the mention of foreign food recipes in state media. This last may sound comically implausible, but it was officially announced by a state-run website on February 6th. So the true nature of pasta as an instrument of Western subversion has been revealed. In 2010, the government provided a list of approved hairstyles for Muslim men. They banned long hair, ponytails, and mullets since the youths donned decadent Western cuts. And the proposed styles are inspired by Iranians' complexion, culture, and religion, and Islamic law. So it just goes on and on. I could read on and on what this is. The banning of Valentine's Day basically is because it's Western. It's a Western culture that cannot be tolerated in Iran. Let me say this. In the books that I've written, in the Iranians I've talked to, they love our freedoms. They love our music. They love the lifestyle that we have here. And many of them, once they come to the United States, become citizens, they still practice their Iranian culture, the celebration of Nowruz, the first day of spring, the Persian New Year. Even as American citizens, they're still practicing their culture and enjoying it. It's their first Nowruz in a safe place where they don't have to worry about government fear and all of the things that they suffered through when they lived in Iran. Many Iranians will tell you and tell me, I don't like to leave my country. I want real freedom in my country so I can stay there. And I don't want to become a refugee. I don't want to have to leave. True freedom should be in my own country. And many of them are heartbroken that they have to leave their own country to find freedom. Well, let me tell you what. They can ban Valentine's Day all they want, but many Iranians won't stop. They'll do it anyway because they see something very beautiful in Valentine's Day. Amidst all of the Greek mythology, there is that central teaching of love. Don't you know the Bible says that God is love? And so many Iranians are exchanging Valentine's today, but they're looking deeper at what it really means. The meaning behind Valentine's Day is God is love. They're attracted to that instead of the filthy religious violence Islam brings in Iran. They are discovering this Valentine's Day the true God of true love. I want to conclude in this half hour with a very urgent appeal that you go to my Facebook page, that you go to my Praying for the Persecuted Church page, and please sign the petition. Bring American pastor Andrew Brunson back home. He's been held in prison in Turkey now for 4 months, and our president, I know, will do everything to secure his freedom. Well, this was an article that was written by Jazz Shaw, and I found it very, very helpful in that he is speaking up for this man, for this pastor, and urging President Trump to do all that he can to secure his freedom. I want to read this to you. Tomorrow will mark the 4th month anniversary of a grim event. On October 7, 2016, American Christian pastor Andrew Brunson was arrested in Turkey by President Recep Tayyip Erdogan's goons, and he has remained in custody ever since. The Daily Caller published a comprehensive report on this whole situation. Brunson's saga started on October 7th when he and his wife, Noreen, were summoned to court in Izmir, a coastal city where they reside and preach. The couple, who has raised three children in Turkey, expected to be informed that day that they were being granted permanent resident status. Instead, the Brunsons were detained and held for deportation. But that wasn't the worst of it for the pastor, who had a small Protestant flock at Izmir Resurrection Church. While Noreen was ultimately released from detention, Andrew was transferred from a detention center to Izmir's Fort Nalu Tipi prison in early December. He was held there on suspicion of providing support to a terrorist group. Wow. As of this week, Brunson's family is telling the media and anyone who will listen, Pastor is being persecuted for his religious beliefs. Pastor Andrew Brunson is being accused of membership in an armed terrorist organization. His family says he's being persecuted, actually, for his religious beliefs. Honestly, it's been a nightmare that I did not think would still be going on, his daughter Jacqueline Brunson says. I mean, he's an American citizen. It's kind of outrageous to think this is happening to an American citizen. When asked if her father might be involved in any terroristic activity, Jacqueline Brunson said, not at all, definitely not. There's nothing that they can look at that has any ties to membership in any terrorist organization. He's the pastor of a church, said Executive Counsel CeCe Hyle. Now, I wanted to preface everything I'm reading, this appeal that the writer of this article makes. This is an urgent matter which cannot be left on the back burner. The Turkish press was saying just last week that a call between Erdogan and Trump was supposed to take place soon, but I'm not seeing any reporting of any such contact. Senators Richard Burr and Tom Tillis have been aware of the situation from the beginning, and surely the president knows about it. So what's with the delay, the writer says and asks. President Trump says, we will make America great, America first. The American pastor, guilty of nothing more than tending to his flock in a largely Islamic nation, is being held in the dungeons of a tyrant who has been torturing his perceived political enemies. I understand the situation is complicated given Turkey's perceived position in global affairs, but enough is enough. You've been famously unafraid to pick up the phone and have frank discussions with world leaders during your first 2 weeks in office. You need to be on the phone with Erdogan and demonstrate that you can pass this challenging test. It's time for Pastor Brunson to come home, and you have the power to make that happen. That is the appeal, the passionate appeal of Jazz Shaw, writer of this article, which I agree with. I know President Trump can do great things by bringing this man home, and I know he's not afraid to, and I pray for Pastor Brunson. And please go to my Facebook page. Please do that as soon as possible and read this article, pass it on, share it, sign the petition. You can actually find the petition at the American Center for Law and Justice. Go to that site, and there is a specific petition for American Pastor Andrew Brunson. Let's bring him home as soon as possible. Well, we heard that Tehran bans Valentine's Day because it's all about love. I want you to hear this wonderful song from Petra called Love. And when we come back, I'm going to continue on my teaching in the Beatitudes. Let's listen.
Love is kind, no lies of envy, true.
With the theme of love, which is really, in essence, what Valentine's Day is all about. For the past several weeks, I have been focusing in on the teaching of Christ on the Sermon of the Mount. And it's classically known as the Beatitudes. And we have been learning a lot of important spiritual truth together from the incredible, life-changing words of Jesus. Really, this teaching of the Sermon on the Mount is the teaching of the King, the teaching of the King to his kingdom citizens. And so, in the Gospel of Matthew, Matthew presents Christ as King. And here is the King's manifesto for you and me living in his kingdom. And so, I want to read now the first 11 verses, and we're going to talk about blessed are those today who hunger and thirst for righteousness. Matthew chapter 5, verse 1 from the New American Standard Translation reads the following. When Jesus saw the crowds, he went up on the mountain, and after he sat down, his disciples came to him. He opened his mouth and began to teach them, saying, quote, blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are those who mourn, for they shall be comforted. Blessed are the gentle, for they shall inherit the earth, or blessed are the meek. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they shall be satisfied or filled. Blessed are the merciful, for they shall receive mercy. Blessed pure in heart, for they shall see God. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called sons of God. Blessed are those who have been persecuted for the sake of righteousness, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are you when they insult you and persecute you and falsely say all kinds of evil against you because of me. We are looking at the Beatitudes, Matthew chapter 5. In our first teaching, we talked about poor in spirit, where Jesus says, you're blessed if you're poor in spirit. And we explained that poor in spirit is not talking about physical poverty, but about spiritual bankruptcy. All of us come to God in our tattered rags and robes of unrighteousness. We are poor in spirit. We are spiritually bankrupt, and we need his mercy and grace. And then we learn that blessed are those who mourn, for they shall be comforted. And Jesus is not talking about just general mourning over the sadness and evil of life. He's talking about those that are poor in spirit are also those that mourn over their sin. They have a contrite heart, always confessing their unworthiness and their need for God's grace. Then we learned last week, blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth. Now, meek doesn't mean you're a doormat and anyone can just walk over. That's what being meek is. We learned that a meek person is one who trusts in God, who waits for his vindication. He will bring right to all the wrongs of the world. He will bring justice. So blessed are the meek, the humble of heart, for they shall inherit the earth. This week, we come to a profound beatitude that is so rich in meaning, where Jesus says, blessed are you who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for you shall be filled. I want you to listen carefully of what Jesus is saying here. This is a very important beatitude. They're all important. But we need to understand what Jesus is talking about here. I know that as a person who loves food, a connoisseur of good food, that I love pasta, I love spaghetti, and I hunger after my wife's spaghetti. Every birthday, she spends time preparing my favorite meat sauce for spaghetti. And I say that I hunger and I thirst after her spaghetti. But that's not exactly what Jesus is saying here. We could say it this way. Your hunger for good food is one thing. Do you have a hunger and thirst for God's righteousness? I want you to notice something about the words that Jesus uses here. The first Greek word he uses in this beatitude is phineo. It's translated hunger in our passage. It has a sense of a strong desire for food, as I said. It is the same word that was used to describe the hunger of Jesus after he had been in the wilderness for 40 days and 40 nights without food. After 40 days of fasting, Jesus would have been very hungry. The Greek word describes a strong hunger for food, phineo. The next Greek word that Jesus uses is pasio. It also describes a strong desire, but this time the desire is for water. It's used in John 19:28 in describing Jesus' thirst after he had been whipped and beaten for hours by Roman soldiers and left hanging on a cross. Near the end, Jesus cried out for something to drink, and he said, I thirst, debasio. This is the word Jesus used in this beatitude. The last important Greek word that Jesus used was kotasso. The word was used to refer to fattened cattle. That is, it means having all that you want. This animal or person is completely satisfied. The Greek words for hunger and thirst, both in present tense. This means, in a nutshell, Jesus is describing someone who is continually hungering and thirsting. And so here's how we could rewrite this beatitude with those three Greek words in mind. Blessed are those who are constantly, continually hungering and thirsting after righteousness, for they shall be completely and totally satisfied. We could say it this way. You're a Christian, and you're not hungering and thirsting in the way that Jesus described, then you have a problem. Your spiritual appetite should be for God's righteousness in your life, for God's righteousness in the world around you. You know, people seek God for many reasons. Some reasons are really better than others. In a time of crisis, it's really common for men and women to make deals with God. I'm sure you've heard that. It goes something like this. If you are there, God, please help me. If you do, I will commit myself to you for the rest of my life. I will go to church and read your Bible. And you've heard the old saying that every soldier in a foxhole during a time of war believes in God. So at a time of crisis, men and women reach out to God. They may be like on a raft on the ocean, in an aircraft that is falling into the water, or a mother who has discovered that her child has been hit by a car. They reach for God to save them, to rescue them, but not because they want their sins forgiven, or they desire to be right with God, or go to heaven. They reach out to save their earthly life, or someone they dearly love. They're hungering and thirsting for their lives at that moment. At the moment of crisis, satisfaction to them means being rescued. So at a moment of crisis, they catch a glimpse really of what life is all about. They find out that without God, it's empty, and that's all there is. I want to take you to the book of Ecclesiastes. Solomon's experience and how this relates with this beatitude today. You know, Solomon was one of the wealthiest and wisest men that ever lived. His wisdom and wealth were gifts from God. Remember what God says, "Behold, I have given you a wise and discerning heart, so that there has been no one like you before you, nor shall one be like you after you. I have also given you what you have not asked, both riches and honors, so that there will not be any among the kings like you all your days." God gave him great wisdom and wealth. Yet Solomon wrote the book of Ecclesiastes to tell us what he discovered about the reality of life. You notice what he says in Ecclesiastes 1:2, "Vanity of vanities," says the preacher, "vanity of vanities, all is vain." For vanity here gives you the idea of emptiness. Therefore, this verse could be rewritten to say, "Empty of empties, all is empty." That is, life is like a soap bubble. Eventually it goes pop, and there is nothing. Life is a big fat zero. Life is empty. The book of Ecclesiastes describes life for the man on the planet without God. Those who know God have something better for which to look, but it is not found in this world. So Solomon goes on to say that there is no benefit in our work. Notice that he is writing from the perspective of what life looks like without God. Keep that in mind. What advantage does man have in all his work which he does under the sun? And the answer is none. There is no benefit for our labor. And then he says, we are born into this world, and then we die. A generation is born, and then it dies. And the cycle is repeated and repeated, but the world always remains. We come and we go, but not the earth. And he continues to remind us in many, many places about the wind, about the sea. And he's wanting us to stop and think. We almost don't stop and think how life is so repetitive. We are constantly seeking, pursuing, and never being satisfied. and then we die, and there is nothing. And again, he's referring to that person who has no relationship with God, that after you die, there's nothing. So think of it this way. Life is repetitive. It goes on and on and on. We clean our homes one day. We're going to do it another day. We wash the dishes. We do it again. We get up in the morning and prepare ourselves for the day, only to repeat it over and over and over again. And we rarely stop long enough to realize that we also are never satisfied in this life. And it continues on and on again. We are never satisfied with the things in our life. Life is empty. That's Solomon's message. Later in Ecclesiastes, Solomon says, all a man's labor is for his mouth, and yet appetite is not satisfied. Ecclesiastes 6, verse 7. Well, the message is really simple. We are always hungering and thirsting for so many things, and we are never satisfied. So we pursue food, sex, nudity, movies, games, control of others, health, prestige, positions of power, and many other things. And yet we rarely stop long enough to think about the meaninglessness of life. We are always seeking and yet satisfied. And you know, God allows us to remain occupied chasing satisfaction. Before we came into his kingdom, we were chasing these things I mentioned. We enjoyed endlessly chasing after things that never completely made us happy. And here is what Ecclesiastes 5, verse 20 says. He seldom reflects on the days of his life because God keeps him occupied with gladness of heart. We are never satisfied. We're always seeking something new, a new experience, a new gadget, a new movie, a new food, something exotic, a new or different experience, something that Solomon puts his finger on. A hungry man will be satisfied by an arrangement of flowers, our beautiful music, our pleasant conversation. All of those things are good, but they have no ability to satisfy hunger. Neither can anything but God's own righteousness satisfy the person who has true spiritual hunger and thirst. So my conclusion to you today on this teaching is a really simple question. If you're a Christian, then we're seeking and hungering and thirsting for God's righteousness in our lives and in the world. But if you're not Christian, Solomon, the wealthiest king and the wisest king in all the world, who wrote Ecclesiastes, says if you're pursuing anything other than the righteousness that comes from knowing God, then you're in vanity. It's pursuit that leads to nothingness. It's all vain. All we are is dust in the wind. Remember that song by Kansas? A provocative song. All we are is dust in the wind. That's a song that many people identify with. The futility of life. But remember, it's a futility of life chasing wind, chasing things, chasing power, position, and money. You're chasing everything and hungering for everything. But you're not hungering for the true God, his true righteousness. And if you're hungering for anything other than who God is and who Jesus is, if your appetite is satisfied with the things of this world, then it's vanity. It's meaninglessness. It's hopelessness. You see, the hymn writer says, my hope is built on nothing less than Jesus' blood and righteousness. I dare not trust the sweetest thing, but wholly cling to Jesus. On Christ's solid rock I stand. All other ground is sinking sand. Jesus promises a blessing to the person who hungers and thirsts for righteousness. Jesus promises that person will be satisfied, will be filled. What is your spiritual appetite for? Is it the latest song by Lady Gaga or Adele, two incredible vocalists they are? But what is your spiritual appetite for in this world? In this world, you will be dissatisfied. You will find meaninglessness and hopelessness when you chase after the things of this world, because the things of this world are passing away. And the only thing that matters, that lasts forever, Paul says, is faith, hope, and love. Love never fails. Jesus promises you, if you are a thirsty and hungry person, you will be satisfied with Christ. You will be satisfied with His perfect righteousness. And as a Christian, if you're hungry and thirsty for God's righteousness, that's a sure sign you're on the right path. So today, I urge you, stop chasing the things of this world. As Ecclesiastes points out, they're all vanity. They lead to death and meaninglessness and hopelessness. The only foundation that lasts forever is the foundation of Christ. Jesus talked about this later on the Sermon on the Mount, that we should build our foundation on His words, because His words will stand the test of time, stand the test of every storm and every wave and every howling wind. That foundation will stand. And so today, follow after Jesus. Hunger and thirst for His righteousness. You will be satisfied. I want to thank all of my friends for listening today. Thank you, Patricia. You are such a blessing to be here all the time. Thank you. God bless you for your support. I won't be here on Thursday. I've got some things to do this week, but I will repeat this program, and I will see you live next Monday on The Cross in the Desert. Have yourself an incredible week, and God bless you.
Faithful lightning of His death.